Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I am your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And today we are talking about the recently released Street Trash, directed by Ryan Krueger. And we'll do a little bit of a, you know,
Little backstory, a little back and forth.
Yeah, a little comparison to the old one. If you've never seen the old one, it is on Tubi. If you are not, if you don't care about being PC, check it out.
Yeah, it definitely is not, you know, it's definitely not being, you know, played at the DNC anytime soon. Well, Roy Frumke, the original director, said essentially
he wanted to offend.
He wanted to offend everyone. He did not want to leave any stone unturned when it came to offending you.
And yeah.
This movie provides that all day. Like, there is just...
Yeah, there's a lot to it. But before we get farther into it, please leave a like for anywhere you can. Rate us, review us anywhere you want to. We will be on Apple Podcasts very soon. So once we go up there, please review us on there. Give us 5 stars if you enjoy this. And let us know how we can do better on Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram at podcastpetrified24. Link will be in the description of this episode. But other than that, thank you so much for listening. And let's get into Street Trash. Dude. It was so... Oh, yeah. By the way, if you want to watch the new one, it is on Apple TV. It's like $5. And it's also on Amazon.
Yeah. And so, it's...
Dude, give us some support, man. Yeah. I mean... If you like splatter films or just movies that you can just get have fun with and get lost into.
Yeah, just a movie where you can just kind of turn your brain off for a moment. It's not going to, like, everything is pretty much ponied up to you in this
movie.
Yeah,
pretty much, yeah.
It's, you know, it's just a sit back, relax, have a couple beers with your friends, and just watch some ridiculous horror movie.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It's not obviously a trauma release, but it's very reminiscent of a trauma release.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It has that quirkiness, that goofiness. It's just an all-around, like, fun movie to watch. And the start of this, pretty much they both have the same kind of premise in a way. You have the Tenafly Viper. You have the homeless people. Obviously, the storylines are wildly different. The first one having, like, you have the Rat King, of course. You have pretty much, like, this community of hobos. And they're all drunkards. And they're just... It's pretty much a plot of, I need to get my next sip.
Yeah, the first one is just a bunch of ravenous, basic alcoholics that are living on the streets of New York. And it's kind of dystopian. And, you know, it's reminiscent of the... New York from the early 80s.
Yeah.
When CBGB was just coming into play on the Lower East Side, and it was just, you know, poverty was everywhere. There were abandoned tenements, everything going on. And there's a guy cleaning up, a liquor store owner, cleaning up his basement for some odd reason. And he pulls a piece of wood off the wall. Lo and behold, there's a case.
Randomly.
Yeah, there's this random, like, case of bottles. And he's like, oh, I can get $1 a piece for these.
Yeah,
He takes them upstairs and puts a dollar sign tag on them. And of course, like at this time, you know, it's $1 for a bottle. It's $1 for your high. So all the homeless people are coming in and they're buying this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, this stuff it's put out by a company called Tenafly, and it's Tenafly Viper. And so upon ingesting this stuff, you basically like your intestines become like this bubbling, like ooze of like... extreme like colors that
like purples, greens, blues,
bright yellows.
Yeah, you pretty much just melt into just this.
Yeah,
you
gelatinize into like this like
sherbet.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, but the movie is like so like he said, it's supposed to offend everyone.
Yeah, so it delves down. Yeah. I mean, it takes you into the life of. In this version, the new version, you have the Rat King, but in the first one, you have Bronson.
Yeah.
Who's a discharged Vietnam veteran who obviously is on the streets because the mental clinics have closed down. So all the homeless people in this movie are living in this impound tow yard, like a junkyard.
Yeah, a junkyard, pretty much. And it just shows like he has PTSD.
Yeah. Bronson has flashbacks.
He flips. And, yeah. It's just, it's supposed to reflect like the times, pretty much.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he's like, out of it, but this movie has what is genitalia, male genitalia getting cut off,
and then people playing football with it,
playing keep away with it, pretty much. You have sexual assault.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Big time.
You have a homeless prostitute. Like, I don't know what Bronson's lover was. I mean, she was dirty.
Yeah.
Her lingerie was is ill-fitting. Queen, yeah, much if you want to call it that.
It was his queen, I guess you could say, yeah. You have necrophilia in this movie, in the first movie.
You have, I wouldn't even know really how to place it, because the young lady is basically fiending and, like, thirsty over a 17-year-old, like, through the whole movie.
Yeah, there's that.
And then they finally, you know, like, get ready to, you know, consummate the relationship, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything that you could literally think of to offend is in this movie.
Yeah. And the new one, it kind of gets away from, like, it has, obviously, it has the genitalia, maybe, or maybe not.
Being, yeah, it does. It has genitalia, yeah. But it's not as crass. The new one definitely stepped in to the future. The new one takes place. It's a dystopian future.
In South Africa, I believe it's Cape Town.
It's Cape Town.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Cape Town. So the homeless are on the street. They're, you know,
crackheads.
Everyone's addicted to something. And it goes into the fact of there's a guy running for mayor for like his third term.
Yeah.
And with that being said, he's going to clean up the streets.
Yeah.
That's like his running point. He's going to clean up the streets. And what that means essentially is that, you know, the ruling elite with their 1% or their 2% or whatever it is in this future are going to take out the trash. And the street trash are the people of lower class.
Yep.
That all pretty much live under pretty much what ends up being almost like martial law. They have like a 6 p.m. curfew. The minute that it gets dark, they have to go inside.
Yeah.
Or of wherever they live. And yeah.
And they need batteries for everything to generate, you know, all their electricity. Like, they have to pretty much, like, scrap for batteries and, like, anything from anything. And that's how they keep the lights on, pretty much, in their kind of little homeless shack, you know, that they live in. There's 4 or 5 characters? It's 5 or 6 characters?
There's 2-Bit.
Yeah, you got 2-Bit, which, if you've never seen the movie...
Fried Barry. Yeah.
He's the main character in that one.
You have the twins.
Yeah, the twins.
The twins who aren't really
it's
twins.
Pap and Wap.
Wars.
Is it Wars? Oh, Wars, yeah.
Wars, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have Chef.
Chef.
Who is this?
He's the driving comedy relief. Yeah. And probably, I would say, I mean, obviously he is not the main character, but I think as far as the storyline, Chef definitely took that on his shoulders and carried it.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, the main character, you have Ronald, played by Sean Cameron Michael, who played the same character in, he was kind of the same character in Fried Barry.
Fried Barry, he was similar. And then you have Alex, who is, you know, heroine in the movie, where she, you know, she kind of comes in and Rat King's cronies try and, you know, basically abscond with her.
Yeah.
And Ronald kind of... Although he is a criminal and he's doing criminal activities, he has a soft spot.
Yeah.
And so he takes in, like, those that are basically on the brink of being taken advantage of.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And the similarities between the first one and the second one is the first one obviously had the veteran, you know, with PTSD who was pretty much just thrown out and left on the streets to defend himself. And this one, the Chef and Ronald are both veterans.
Yeah.
They explain that they both served in the army, and that's how they met each other. And then, of course, you know, you have, you know, you get introduced to everybody else. You get introduced to 2-Bit, who is a which they are crackheads. Like, they shows them.
Yeah, they do drugs. Crack. They do drugs. They definitely drink. I think 2-Bit is more or less, I forget the little creature's name.
Oh my gosh. Freaking Sockle.
Sockle.
Sockle. Sockle.
So I think he's having, like, literal schizophrenic visions.
Yeah.
And so, like, Sockle is just, like, he is, you know, he's your alter ego.
Yeah.
He is, like, trying to get 2-Bit to
get laid.
Go have sex. Yeah. I mean, anything you can think of. I mean, Sockle's pulling his little Sockle thingy out and, you know, wanting him to basically go after, you know, the main heroine of the movie. And he's just every bad idea that you have, like, anamorphosized into a little creature.
But he is a favorite character.
Oh, but he's a great
Sokka character. Sokka and 2-Bit.
Yeah, without 2-Bit, this movie would not have like been as good as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, but pretty much the premise of the movie is these people are just trying to survive and trying to make it. They come across Alex, who was going to get taken advantage of by the Rat King's goons. But Ronald, with the battery that he had stolen from somebody else, from pretty much the marsh, the freaking...
The cop.
The cop who gets his pecker.
Yes, he steals the battery from... he's running with the battery,
yeah,
playing keep away.
It's supposed to be like a reflection of the first scene in the first movie where he, you know, people are just taking alcohol... Like
the alcohol and the $3.
Yeah.
Yeah, the $3 that he steals in the first one is essentially the battery in this one.
Yeah.
Except in the first one, the cop does not lose his junk. But in this one, you know, in the chase, you know, I mean, things happen and the cop basically loses his junk.
Yeah, because Ronald gets a drug. I forgot what it was called. Oh my gosh, what was it?
It was prick something. I forget the exact, but there's a really like almost like Morpheus Matrix based character in the movie called Society.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Society has like this duality to his essence. He's a drug dealer, so he's doing essentially what's wrong to society, but he's also like supplying the homeless people with like these drugs to to calm their nerves, to satiate their misery.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of strange, but he does have that dichotomy to him. So I forget what it was called, but I think it was prick something.
Yeah.
And he gives it to the cop, and the cop gets an instant erection.
Yeah, he blows it in the cop's face.
Yeah,
Because he takes it, and he blows it in the cop's face.
Yeah.
And instantly, they're just running out with their peckers out.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna say, this cop man, he put Ron Jeremy to shame.
Yo, like, yeah, he has a huge.
Dude, I mean, it's gigantic. It's like at least 14, 15 inches, and I'm like, what the hell, man? This cop should not be doing this. The cop should be like in adult films or something.
Yeah, and so he's running after him, but before he can capture him, Ronald runs behind the gate, slams it on him, and
Pecker lost.
Yep.
Yeah, he lost, man. He'll show up. I mean, he survives. He shows up later in the film.
Yeah.
You've definitely got it.
But yeah, pretty much what they're trying to do is, you know, stay alive and all that, figure out what's going on. You kind of get the sense that the mayor, you know, like, you know, we said already that he's trying to clean up the streets and all that. But unfortunately, they get, you know, confronted by the goons of Rat King again. And pretty much they were trying to look for, you know,
they were trying to take Alex. And
yeah,
so,
trying to take Alex in.
So Ronald buys Alex's freedom for 48 hours by swapping the battery that he's just, you know, gotten.
Yeah.
To the Rat King's people. So he gives it over, and she's basically free man for 48 hours.
Yeah.
And so they take her back because curfew gets called. So they go back to basically to the junkyard.
Yeah.
I don't know what really you'd call it at this point because it's not really a tow yard. Because the lower classmen do not really have vehicles.
Yeah, it just looks like an abandoned like house, like over like pretty much a building.
Yeah,
like no roof, nothing. So
yeah, and that's when you get introduced to the whole cast of characters. That's when you meet Chef and everything. Well, of course, you know, surmising what's going to happen, the government, their way of cleaning up the streets is that now they have
developed a chemical.
Yeah, they've taken the premise. The story is, they've taken the recipe, I guess, for the Tenafly Viper from the first one, and they are injecting it into people, and they're atomizing it into like these drones that float around and you know, spray it in your face. Yeah. And
unlike the first one, you do get a lot of splatter scenes where the people are just melting. All these homeless people get sprayed with the Viper, and they are just, like, disintegrating. One, the effects were done really well. They were, like, the old-school effects, you know, with the bubbling of the skin, how they, you know, they showed people's bodies pretty much disintegrating from within and falling apart. And the effects were done really, really well.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they used the same colorways.
Yeah.
They used a lot of the same, you know, the color theory that the first movie did.
Yeah, the blue, the green, and all that.
Super vibrant. It was just, you know, it was definitely a drawback. It was a pullback to, you know.
Yeah, he was a huge fan of the first one. So, yeah, it would only make sense to do it like that. And I'm glad he did it like that. There's very like little CGI used, you know, for these scenes. Like, it's all practical is what it looks like. And yeah, so these, you know, these people are, you know, kind of, they're the mayor's cleaning up the street and they're just liquefied all over the ground. People don't notice it at first, but there's like, you start to see like, okay, maybe one or two. But as this, as like the movie progresses, you start to see like these puddles like everywhere and just clothes.
They're walking around and you just see like these gelatinized people like in puddles laying there.
Yeah. So you see the crew pretty much like, you know, making, you know,
they're on the hustle.
Yeah. They're on the hustle. Grind. Yeah. They're stealing. They're, you know, robbing people and all that, you know, in a funny way. And unfortunately Alex gets caught again by the Rat King's goons and you get introduced to the Rat King, who is a,
very similar to Bronson's woman in the first one. She is like a disheveled, homeless-looking woman.
She's like almost
covered in dirt, and she's got like vile, like green loogies, and she has like this rat man slave who's
you know, a diaper.
Yeah, he's a grown man who's like 6'2", and he probably weighs like 110, and he's in like this dirty diaper with like boo-boo stains, and.
Yeah,
a lot of people were like really like grossed out by it, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a dystopian future. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a hopeless world.
Yeah, but pretty much like the Rat King like says like, you know, it was gonna like kill them and all that, and that she needed to stay alive, you know, because she's dying. You know, the battery. You know, she needs a battery pretty much to keep her all of her medical equipment on, so that way she can stay alive. Well, Alex has a blueprint that she found.
That she absconded with.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. That she just stumbled upon. No.
Yeah.
Of one of these drones, and has a battery that can pretty much last them a lifetime. And so she gives her a deal. She's like, okay. She goes, you give me this battery and I'll let you go and I won't bother y'all anymore. So, of course, they come up with a plan where Chef doesn't want to do anything but be on lookout. Actually, he just wants to stay home.
He didn't even want to go out. He just wanted to stay back at home base and like let you know when, you know, when things were going well.
But. Yeah. So they get together and they find one of these drones because the drone approaches you if you're out past curfew, and it identifies you if you are homeless or not homeless, and pretty much sprays you with this toxin and then lets you melt. And so they find one. They let it approach 2-bit. And finally, they try to capture it. They finally bring it down after they, like, it tries to fly away and they're just hanging off of it. And, you know, they got to get the battery out. And Chef's like, well, you just got to, like, you just got to open it. So he goes to mess with it and he gets sprayed with the toxin. And unfortunately, probably one of the good, best characters in there.
And unfortunately, Chef, you know,
dies.
He meets his maker.
Yeah. Which it's like, it's a cool little moment, man. It's like a cool little.
Yeah, because you see the camaraderie between.
Cool little moment. I mean, like, it's a very touching moment in a way, even though this is like a silly film. The plot is done very well. Like, it still has a good driving plot. It's not a serious movie, obviously. It's not something that you're going to, like, be like, oh, man, this is making me think on all levels. No, it's something to get lost in, but you do get invested in the characters.
Yeah.
Because they're very well written.
Yeah, and Chef was probably, in my opinion, one of the best written characters out of the whole film.
Yeah,
I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of writing to 2-bit. It's like, go out there and act psycho. And, you know, that's where he came off. But Chef had wit, and he brought the comedic relief. He brought up a breakup in, you know, in the hopelessness that this culture was affording them.
Yeah.
So he broke up the monotony. He made things funny. He always had a joke. Even though some of his jokes were off color, once again, that is one point that it takes from the original. The jokes are not PC. So if you're going to, you know, if you're extremely easily offended, then this probably in the entire essence of the movie you want to turn away from.
Yeah.
It's not for you.
Yeah. But most of the jokes in there, or not jokes, but some of the stuff that they're talking about, they're trying to go into deep thought of. It's like one of them that he talks about is Peter Pan. They're just like talking about Peter Pan. It's like they, you know, hit the joint and then they were like going into like deep detail and stuff, right? And they're talking about Peter Pan and how Peter Pan is actually, you know,
he's the wicked one.
He's the wicked one because he's trying to steal these kids. And Hook is actually one of the kids that got away and Hook is technically the good guy, which is like, it's one of like the old, like, I guess, conspiracies behind like the, not, I guess not theories, I guess you should say, behind like Peter Pan, like who's actually the really good guy and who's not.
Yeah, it's like the Batman Joker scenario, yeah, where, you know, this rich billionaire boy is, you know, he's the good guy, but the poor guy in the lunatic asylum in Arkham is the bad guy.
Yeah.
So it kind of, and every one of the stories that he has kind of go down that.
Yeah, well, you know. Pinocchio, well, not Pinocchio, what did he say? He had Peter Pan.
He had Peter Pan and the Lost Boys.
Oh, that, he had Pinocchio. He was talking about Geppetto. Pinocchio,
yep.
Being a child diddler, that's why he wanted to.
He wanted to build a boy.
And now, it might not have any connection, but you brought it up to me while we were watching the movie. It's like, hey, are they like throwing a nod to like the
Pooniverse? The Pooniverse? Impending Pooniverse? I kind of got the feeling because the next two releases, I mean, he didn't bring up Bambi, obviously.
Yeah.
There was nothing he brought up about Bambi. But, I mean, it could very well be because, yes, indeed, he brought up Pinocchio and he brought up Peter Pan in the same light that they are presenting these stories.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that he might be giving, you know, a gentle nod to, you know.
Yeah, or it could just be us maybe looking too much
into it. Maybe we're just a little too hopeful for the this is just to finally come into being.
Yeah. We're hopefully those movies come out very, very soon. But anyway, so unfortunately, Chef dies. I believe it's they take the battery back and they realize that what the mayor was trying to do is they finally realize his plan, that he's trying to clean up the streets, like he's trying to kill all of them and get rid of them, the street trash. So she decides to, first they get confronted by Officer Nocock, and which his name is actually, oh my gosh, the cop's name.
I do not remember, but I can look it up very quickly.
But pretty much they get confronted by them, and they all get captured except for Alex, Officer Maggot.
There you go.
They all get captured and taken to pretty much a facility to, you know, be exterminated, like a concentration camp type of thing. And so Alex goes to the Rat King's goons, but unfortunately the Rat King didn't make it because she didn't get the battery back to her on time.
But the toe-sucking skinny man is now in control. He's sitting upon the throne.
Yeah, and so she asks for their help because, you know, they want Alex to join her side, their side, because, you know, she's a good fighter, she's a strong woman. But she's like, well, there's not going to be any sides because the mayor is trying to kill all of
everybody.
Us. Yeah. So she asks for their help, and you find out that the dude who was chained up and licking toes is actually a very eloquent speaker. And so they decide to help them. And they break into this facility to free them. Unfortunately, one of the twin brothers is put in a gas chamber, and for some odd reason,
there's a gas mask
There's a dead soldier in there with the gas mask.
Yeah.
And so he picks it up, and he's the only one to survive. But yeah, now that they got to figure out how to get out of there, how to kill the mayor, how to pretty much take this poison to his front door and let him have the taste of his own medicine. But of course, you know, throughout the whole movie, Society, the drug dealer, he is, you know,
he has a blue vial.
He has a blue vial. It's glowing. And every time that Ronald asks for it, he's like, you're not ready for that yet. You're not ready for that. So he sticks to the regular crack and cocaine or whatever he has.
Yeah, the prick powder. Yeah. Prixie powder.
Oh, that's what it is.
Prixie powder. That's what it was.
And finally, though, now that they're all captured and in this facility, he finally is like, okay, you're ready for it now. And pretty much what it does, it just like super soldiers him. Like it's a super serum for, you know, from Captain America. Like it just makes him like react.
Invincible. Yeah.
Invincible.
He can get hurt and it doesn't really affect him. It doesn't phase him.
It's pretty much just like angel dust or something.
Yeah.
So they finally break out and mow down all these people. For one of the characters we forgot to mention was Offley. Offley is this first-person point of view character. You never see his face. You just see his arms, like kind of like Hardcore Henry.
Yeah, you just see his arms doing stuff. And like, yeah. They're like, are you okay? And he gives a thumbs up.
Yeah, he doesn't talk or anything. Yeah. He just gives a thumbs up and waves, and that's it. And he helps them out. You know, he's helping them out. And finally, they decide to take the Viper to the mayor, who's having this party on like some steps in front of his building, like his actual like
his ivory tower.
Yeah, pretty much his ivory tower. And finally they all show up. There's a firefight, freaking and I forgot to mention, when he takes that blue vial, when Ronald takes a blue vial, he could finally see the little blue guy. Sokol.
So he can finally see Sokol.
And
he realizes basically the madness and insanity. And at this point, as there is like all of this, you know, liberation and overtaking of the government, 2-Bit actually comes into like mental clarity.
Yeah.
Like he kind of like is, you know, Sokol's there, but Sokol, like the whole, like in the beginning of the film when Sokol's talking to 2-Bit, you can tell like Sokol's in control. He's in the driver's seat. And 2-Bit's just along for the ride.
Yeah.
But now it's like, it's strange how they kind of played on that. And now 2-Bit's like, oh, well, no, I don't think so. And you're just like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah.
Now he can see Sokol also.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sokol's still a driving force. You know, he's still, you know, trying to be your subconscious or whatever.
Yeah.
Almost like a dirty little gremlin-y freaking Jiminy Cricket kind of thing going on much like with this guy. You know, he's your conscious, but your conscious doesn't give a crap anymore. He just gave up on life. So they get to the stairs and they're there. And
it's like a firefight.
And, you know, now it's time for them to use, you know, give the rich, the 2%, the taste of their own medicine.
Yeah.
So they bust out, you know, it's an atomized Tenafly Viper now.
Yeah.
So they throw like almost like tear gas cans of it out into the populace.
Yeah.
And it starts taking control of all these rich people.
Yeah.
And they start melting, and like all these, you know, rich sophistos with like fake breast augmentation.
Oh,
That was a great scene. I have to give it up on that one. That was probably my best like kill out of the whole movie. This rich sophisto lady gets infected with a Tenafly out of the can. And it's very similar to in the first one. Bronson's girlfriend melts that way.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And her breasts get filled with, like, the goop and all that.
Yeah.
Well, this is, like, I mean, but it takes its time on this one. And, like, her breast swells into, like, this, like,
balloon
packet of multicolored madness. And she, like, digs at it, and you can see her, like, open it up, and then it just...
Yeah, that one was pretty, that was pretty good.
That was probably one of my favorite ones out of the whole film.
So they're all, like, melting. And Mayor, of course, runs off. So finally they corner him. They confront him about it, and he's just, like, shitting on them. Like, you know, y'all are nothing. Y'all don't contribute to society. Y'all are nothing. And so they just take the can, pop it open, and shove it right down his throat.
Yep.
And he just turns into this giant, like, blueberry, pretty much, and pops, you know, everywhere. And the only thing that's left moving is his mouth. It's like his piece of his mouth is like all in the goo, and he's calling them street trash, and he's calling them this and that.
There's no lungs there, but as long as you have a mouth, everyone, you can still pronunciate.
Like, and so of course, 2-Bit goes over there and stomps him out, and they pretty much have defeated the mayor, and now they can start cleaning up the streets the way they want to and start doing better for themselves. Maybe a little bit of crack in there, but...
Very possible. There might be some high-rise crack houses in the dystopian future.
Yeah. But it pretty much ends there on a victory, pretty much. Now they're all one giant family, and the post-credits, you know, pretty much like the chained-up dude, he is now in the mayor's seat. He's not the mayor, he's just in the seat, you know, because they've taken over the office. One of his goons goes up to him and asks him, so where to next? And they point right into Washington, which was around the area that the first one takes place, actually.
Well, the first one's New York City.
Is it New York City?
It's New York City. That the Washington is, and we're not getting political, but the Washington is definitely the insurgency, the takeover of the Capitol, the stomping. And that is definitely, although it is filmed in Australia, South Africa, it is in Cape Town, it is a nod to the American political system and the current situation we find ourselves in.
Or it could be a lead into the Toxic Avenger.
Oh, it could be.
I'm just throwing out.
But that's Jersey.
That's a far one that I'm throwing out right there. Can't be that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
no.
It's pretty much what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
That's why they point to Washington.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie to just to get lost in and have fun with. I mean, it is crude. It's not PC. It goes balls to the wall, sometimes literally. And the practical effects are amazing in this movie. Ryan Coogler did a really good job paying homage not only to the first one, but kind of putting his own stamp on this one, giving a good plot. And when I say that, I don't mean like it's like a plot that you're going to be doing a lot of like thinking, deep diving. No, it's a good plot to follow. You can invest in the characters. They're really well written. Unfortunately, Chef dies. But hey, that makes you attached to the characters more because now you feel them. There's a moment in the movie where Ronald's sitting outside of their little house, and Alex is going to leave because like no one's going to hold her back. Like she doesn't need help from anyone, and they kind of have this connection, and they kind of give the backstory of how like things came to be, and pretty much it's the government went in and destroyed their business and her family's business and killed all of her family, and it was just her and her little sister. And when she went out to go get groceries, pretty much came back and her sister was being loaded up onto a car, possibly for experiments for a new drug, which would then become Viper. But they have this kind of moment, this touching moment, because they both kind of lost something. You know, we don't know Ronald's backstory, but there's an indication that he is also lost people in his life, like a lot of people.
Yeah, and I mean, really, his background starts with Chefs and the fact that they were both in the war.
Yeah.
So that's my thought process kind of turned to PTSD, that maybe they're just lost in the mix. They've seen a lot of things that they probably shouldn't have seen. And
yeah, but there's like little moments, like even though it's a silly movie, these characters are quirky. They're kind of like, I guess crappy people in some kind of way. They still like are people, and you get that human element from them, even though the plot is like, crackheads just trying to hustle, pretty much. But you still get connected to these characters, and that's what was done really well. And yeah, dude, props to him and for making this movie. It's a sequel technically to the first one, so we'll see where it goes from here. Hope he keeps doing what he's doing. And
well, I hope he does something soon, because if he waits like 30-odd years like from the first one to make another one, then we'll be sitting here sipping our Ensure shakes at like 80 years old.
Hospice is gonna have to keep us recording.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was such a good movie, guys. Check it out. I mean, it's it's just a good watch, like if you're into like a splatter film, or if you just want to have fun with a movie.
If you just want to turn a movie on and just like sit back and just literally like drift off into La La Land, it's the movie for you.
Yeah, and show support. I mean, especially with like the movies, not all movies nowadays that are made by these high production companies aren't great. It's like crap is just being produced now. So to have somebody like Ryan Coogler, not saying like he's like a big star, he's just doing music videos and doing kind of low end stuff, and now he's making these, he made, Fried Berry, then he made, this. It's cool to show some support. So like, give him some support, man, because, he could make something even greater probably one day. But props to him.
Yep. Get it on the ground floor.
Yeah, for making the sequel. That's Street Trash, man. Thank y'all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope maybe this intrigues you to go show some support to Ryan Coogler and, check out this movie.
And you can watch the first one.
You can watch the first one if you want to.
Watch the first one. that's my recommendation. Watch the first one.
Yeah, that way you can kind of get some kind of premise for the second one. But that'll be it for this episode. Thank y'all so much for listening. Again, follow us on Instagram. Link will be in the description. Other than that, we'll see you next week.